Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, September the 18th, 2009. There's frost in the forecast. Wait, no, there isn't. Is it a weather market or not? We'll ask that and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333 and by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll discuss the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. They're all panelists and all in studio today, right here on this edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's begin our discussion with this question. Paul Cooley, do we still have time to trade a weather market for corn in the next month?
Only if it gets so wet that we can't harvest any corn or something like that. But the answer, basically, the cold weather market is over with.
Dan Zwicker, do you agree?
I think so. I think the only thing that would turn the market up on a futures would be a severe weather-type delay, and the weather pattern at the moment doesn't indicate that's going to be the case.
And Kurt Kimmel?
Well, it's going to have to happen before October 1st, and the weather maps aren't showing that right now. But I'd agree with the other weather concern is too wet, which is the concern in the southern part of the belt right now.
Well, let's not deal with that until we get enough rainfall to make it too wet. I don't know that the marketplace will deal with it particularly. So now we have to deal with the fundamentals, Dan Zwicker, of a very large crop. Can the marketplace absorb it and how quickly?
That's going to be a little tricky. This is, the time of year, the last 2 weeks of September is a very strong seasonal down, and I think that's what kind of took hold in the market here late this week after we had that early frost scare earlier in the week that kind of chased out the shorts. But the early yield reports are very, very strong, but we got to keep in mind that they're going to have to be strong if we're going to reach this 162 bushel national average.
In Chicago this week, and remember, the September contracts all expired, so now the lead options are December. We give you week-to-week trade, so there'll be some September and December numbers both in these. December corn futures this week had a high of 347 and three quarters. The low on the continuation chart at 315 and a quarter, a settlement price at 318 and 318 even was up 3.5 cents. That for the December contract, although that December contract was down a penny and three quarters on its own merits for the day. And then the December 2010 contract at 367 and a quarter was down 3 1/4. What do producers need to be most aware of beyond safety going into the harvest season?
Well, we're faced with three dilemmas. First one is, well, how is the market going to react if we do have this yield explosion, let's say from 162 to 168 or larger yield? The second thing that we have to look at is how are we going to store it with expensive commercial storage? And the third one is, how are we going to dry 10% moisture drop, like 25 down to 15, something like that. So one of the things that my basically opinion is that it's going to be a long harvest. It's going to take some time. I think the storage industry, we'll be able to take care of a lot of storage because the crops, the laden, will be using a lot of that. But once again, you have to fill those drying bins up, let them dry, then haul that dry grain out, and you process a lot of the grain yourself. I think it's going to take a lot of time to harvest it, and I don't think the market problem is going to develop until the last half of the harvest.
And so you mean the market problem in terms of the ability to handle the crop. So the first half will go in fairly simply and get used up, but once we get to the second half, we'll start to bog things down, and then cash basis might fall apart pretty sharply.
Well, it depends, or just the mere fact of the large moisture discounts. A 10% moisture, 10 points of moisture, we're talking 4 cents drying point, 40 cents a bushel. You know, we're talking about astronomical just charges against the crop that's $3 a bushel. You know, we're not going to have much take-home money.
Yeah, not a lot of take-home money. What do you do with this when you're facing it with your clients? You've got $3 cash corn. They probably have insurance that may or may not pay off for the crop insurance. They may have an acre payment, but that won't come until next year. They're likely to have some pretty good-sized cash needs in the next 3 months, mostly cash rent. How do you help them deal with it?
Well, it depends on their own situation. You know, everybody's different totally, and that's huge in this type of atmosphere. But if you've got commercial storage, a guy might want to consider maybe a price of that and replacing ownership on paper. If you got on-farm storage and wanting to fill the bins and try to store if it's good quality, you might want to capture the carry, you know, maybe hedge in the July and come back and do some type of call option to protect that. But that's the challenge in here, but we feel the overall risk is probably to the downside here over the short term.
And how far to the downside?
Well, I can't see a huge sell-off here. I agree the harvest is going to be strung out and it's going to move through the marketing channels. It's going to take some time. We feel that maybe the futures, December, maybe down to this 290, 280 area, we'll just have to play it by ear here and see what type of demand comes forward. A large percentage of this crop's not sold, but a large percentage of this crop's not bought yet from the end users. So I think end users will be willing to take advantage of any wide basis to gather inventory.
Dan, what do you see on the tech side?
Well, so far we're trying to make a stand above this $3 mark. Whether or not we can hold that all the way to the end is going to depend upon how big this crop actually is. But I think for the most part today, this week's pop up in the market, and then of course we fell back to unchanged to slightly lower here by the end of the week. We still have those early September lows to kind of test out for support. So I actually think the market might be trying to turn sideways in here until we get further down the road into harvest and we see whether or not the yield's going to explode to the upside or if this 162 is enough for now.
Did each of you start the week out thinking that we might just have turned the corner early in the week and then decided, well, maybe that's not the case?
Well, when I read that weather forecast bright and early, about 5 o'clock in the morning, I knew there was going to be some problems. I didn't dream that it was going to go up as much, 30 cents in one day like it did. But I knew that there would be some price explosion. I think the big factor here, though, Todd, is not only are we below the cost of production here in the U.S., but we are below the cost of production around the world. And nobody can raise corn any cheaper than we can when it's all said and done. So that's going to probably delay and detract from other people from raising a lot of corn in the world.
So what you're suggesting is that others will hurt before the farmer in the U.S. Others will hurt more than the farmer in the U.S.
That's a factor. And then also the mere fact of putting a crop of corn in means we'll have less corn possibly the following year, too.
How'd you change it?
One point that I want to make out, if you take the price of corn and convert it to U.S. Dollar index terms, we're back to where we were back in 2007. So when you take a look at U.S. prices of corn with the weakness of the dollar and the strength that we've seen in the foreign currencies. U.S. corn is much cheaper than what you would normally think of when you take a look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, on one hand, that says it's really cheap. On the other hand, it says it'll be used by the world probably first, and, well, and the U.S. raises more corn than anybody else.
Well, I think it spells optimism that demand could be a whole lot stronger than everybody thinks as we start off this new marketing year.
Did you start the week off a little bit more positive than you ended it,
Kurt? Well, it was an emotional roller coaster for me. I went in the office Sunday night, and Monday morning we were worried about China. You know, they're trying to hype that up. That's going to be bearish. And, of course, Tuesday we're off to the races on weather. Then the weather forecast warmed up. Then towards the end of the week they tried to spin China, freezing their crop off of much as 3 million metric tons of beans being lost, which is too high. So it was an emotional roller coaster. Yeah, it was a huge up and down market-wise and news-wise.
Okay, so let me nail all of you down just a bit on this one. At this point, and I suspect it's pretty tough this week to try to get a handle on which direction the market really is going, but would you feel easier sideways, sideways to higher, sideways to lower, or some other option?
I like to be optimistic, say we're moving sideways, but if we take out these previous lows in here, we've probably got another technical week coming at us.
I'm going to stick with sideways for now until I see what the weather forecasts are next week.
I don't think there's any doubt that the trend is lower, and the trend's your friend, and you don't turn around until we get an October crop report that says we have a 162-bushel corn crop.
Anything you want to do with the trend? I haven't heard you use that phrase for a while. Anything you want to do with the trend, your friend?
Well, you stay with it. And one of the rules in commodity trading is don't fight the trend or the tape. And, you know, it's something we've learned, and just you don't fight it. And the market will establish a bottom at some point in time. The problem is that I don't think we have these bigger numbers factored into the marketplace yet.
So bigger number as in 165,
160. You know, I don't think we have those numbers factored in yet, Tom.
Who's going to go up in size? Which states? Who gets the biggest gain? And what problem does that create for them? Iowa?
I think it's across the board, Todd. I think it's the South. We're hearing yields out of Kentucky. 200 plus bushels of corn, and the Boot Hill of Missouri, the seed corn people are telling us the corn yields are great. And, you know, yes, we know we have some flooded out places, but unless we have an acreage discrepancy, and that's something we have to look forward to on the October report, because we've all nodded our heads to see that October surprise on acres, because that can still surprise us here.
Right, and USDA could surprise us with actual acreage, correct, because that's where they make the adjustment sometimes based off of the FSA numbers, if I remember correctly. Do you think they might?
Yes.
Would you dare to guess?
Dan,
a direction?
Tell us how many acres. Yeah, you know, Dan, he can remember some of the scary points of October.
I mean, yes, October is noted for those acreage changes, and you get those October surprises, and they go both ways on
right.
this thing. And I would almost be a little scary. I really hate to say this, but it wouldn't surprise me if corn acres went up. Because on the resurvey, they did not resurvey the good areas that got aggressive planting early. So you might see higher acres in some of those areas that they didn't resurvey.
So they did not resurvey. I don't recall about Minnesota, but I know they didn't resurvey Iowa, nor did they resurvey Nebraska. So you'd be scared that in those two really good states, they might increase acres?
They had every opportunity to.
Kurt?
In Illinois, there is no way we have 200,000 more corn acres than we did a year ago. I would be more than happy to drive anybody around and show them personally.
But I'll put a dollar on Kurt's bet there, too.
On which side? You're going to bet that
Kurt's
that
got
he's
the
right
idea.
That
yeah.
he's right.
There's too many seed corn guys that didn't sell enough corn. There's too many bean guys going to Hawaii this winter when selling seed. But Nebraska, I've heard that people have gone out there and drove through there, and there's a lot more corn than they've seen in the past. But, yeah, Illinois, I'll debate that with the other states. Who knows?
Okay, so yield, one of the things that Mr. Cooley says we have to deal with is a wait and see, I suppose. The other things we have to deal with are storage and drying. We don't have very much time. What do you think they ought to do on either of those?
Well, it depends on your situation. I mean, it's one of those deals where on-farm storage and on-farm drying is going to be a premium here this year as you can keep moving down. Otherwise, you're going to have to invest in maybe some old wagons and sit in line, I guess.
Cheap labor and big wagons. There you
I think I'd fill my drying bins early and at least get them drying as you're combining beans and then play that game one more time at least.
Any options from you on it?
I think it depends upon your individual situation, but it's real hard to make commercial storage pay if we're in a sideways type market and we keep losing carry. And I think regardless how bearish you want to be, at some point in time, this market is going to flatten out. And when it flattens out, it's real hard to make storage pay in that environment. So I think take a look at option type strategy to re-own this, and then we don't know what we're going to wake up to the next morning.
We'll be back in 2 minutes when we'll continue our discussion. You are listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. We experienced another week of what one climatologist called the Midwest version of California weather. Consistent daytime highs and overnight lows, as well as daily sunshine, occurred in most locations throughout the state this week. The only exception was in far southern Illinois, where clouds and even a few showers occurred as an upper-level low crawled through the Gulf Coast states. Daytime temperatures generally were in the upper 70s to low 80s, and overnight lows were in the 50s across Illinois. As a result, average temperatures this week were 1 to 2 degrees above normal in the northern third of Illinois and nearer to just slightly above normal in the southern two-thirds of the state. Other than some light showers in southern Illinois, there was no precipitation in the state this week. Most of Illinois has had little rainfall this month so far. It appears this unusual string of days with near-perfect weather will be coming to an end over the weekend and into next week. Mid-level moisture will begin making its way into Illinois by Sunday, and some scattered showers and perhaps even a few thundershowers may develop. An upper-level trough swinging into the northern plains will keep chances for rain going the first half of the week, and then a strong cold front moving into the Midwest the last half of next week will maintain the possibilities for rain through the end of the week and perhaps into the weekend. Temperatures next week will likely average near to slightly above normal. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded September the 18th, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Let's go through some of the other numbers that came in from Chicago for the week. December wheat this week had a high of 481.5, a low at 450. It settled 15.5 cents higher, that on the lead option chart, at $4.57 and a quarter. July at 501.5, down 9.25 on the week. From the CME Group side, live cattle, October contract, 87.75 for its high, the low at 85.45. A settlement price down $1.67.5 at 85.55. September feeders at 97.25, down $1.92.5. And the October lean hog futures, 50.50 for the high, the low at 54.05. A settlement price at $50.80, down $1.67.5. In studio with us today, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Soybeans this week in November high at $9.77.75 on the week, the weekly low at $8.92. It is a new lead option at $9.41. The settlement price was down 43.5 cents. November beans for 2010 settled at $9.04, up 4¾ cents. There was an awful lot of action early in the week in the beans. Kurt, did it surprise you that it managed to end the week 43 lower?
Well, when you look at the big picture there for the week, I mean, it had a huge up and a big down, but beans, looking at the chart, held in probably a little bit better than where the corn did. So, but, you know, for the news, I mean, we tried to freeze them off and everything else, and ideas that, you know, down the road we're going to have a big South American crop. You know, beans are going to have a lot more news in them, especially as we get into harvest, because white mold, sudden death, I don't know if it's a situation like we saw with the aphids coming in. We really didn't know the yield until we got into harvest. So beans could be quite touchy here over the next 2 to 3 weeks as we start seeing early yields come in.
I think it's a disease that farmers in Iowa, white mold anyway, have not seen that often in the past. Actually, I'm sorry, it's the SDS that the farmers in Iowa have not seen that often in the past. So we'll see how they trade that out as they go through their harvest season there. And they should be getting started, I would think, on soybean harvest fairly quickly. He suggested that it was a good week or a better week in the beans than in the corn. If you take a look at it technically, it was at least an outside week, wasn't it?
Well, I don't think you want to necessarily look at the lead chart in here for any clues, because, you know, that did include a couple days of the September option. It expired, and we shifted over November. So I think you need to kind of take a look at the pure November chart. And we did manage to close unchanged to slightly higher. I mean, we did have a good weekly up going until Friday collapse. But I think it's an indication, too, that the bean market is trying to make a stand in here. There are no beans really to be had yet. You know, harvest is still a couple weeks away. There's some early beans out, but the supply situation makes it very volatile here, at least in the short term, until we get a little more new supplies put into the pipeline.
Yeah, on the weekly chart, by the way, if I've got the right chart up, while the lead option in the beans did end 43.5 lower, the weekly chart was just about that much higher. I think it was up 38 cents on that chart, if my numbers are correct, and I think that's right. So we'll see how that plays out. What do you see in the bean market?
You know, let's go to the simple one first.
Okay.
What is the USDA going to is it going to be a higher yield or a unchanged yield or a smaller yield on the next USDA report? And I'd bet a dollar today that it's going to be a larger number. I think the white mold is an issue, but my general impression is that we will see a higher bean number. The problem is when I look at the soybean crush, and that's the profitability to buy a bean, turn it into soybeans and soybean oil and maybe biodiesel. But the real factor here, it's an enormously good crush margins and outlook for the soybean processor. He's going to be bidding against the exporter, and that's going to last not only through harvest but clear into next year, because we're basically the only market in town. And as I really look at it, is will a farmer store $9 beans or sell them? And my impression is he'll probably sell $9 times 50 bushels from the combine.
Well, then, is that what he should do?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Todd. But I did encourage guys that sell $10 beans. As far as what to do, it's a money factor here, and it's a problem when you have $9 beans and $2.75 corn. You know, you have to raise cash somewhere along the line.
Well, the next question then, if Paul, you're correct, if the United States remains the only soybean game in town, and the crushers, the exporters, both need beans periodically, do you wait it out for cash basis to jump to overs when you market?
There's some that will. The million-dollar question is how, if there's a wet fall or wet this. We can all remember 1972, or at least I can pretty well, because not only did the beans go up, they went up substantially. And, of course, we had a big buyer in the game called Russia. This year we have a big buyer called China.
Will they stay put?
Well, actually, yeah, China, it's huge. We've got, you go back on all the sales we've had, we are 100% more sold up to China. We're double the sales, so it's going to be real critical to get these beans out in a timely fashion and get them to an export channel to meet that demand, because we don't want to lose that demand. And the same point, as Paul mentioned, the crushers are going to be there to competing for them. So this is going to create some opportunity here for the producer. The market's flat. The demand's up front. And if you get these spikes up in here, it's going to give guys opportunity to sell beans. We like moving them, replace them on paper, own them on paper for 40, 50 cents. The market goes up, you can participate. If the market doesn't follow through, then that's all you have at risk.
When you move them, are you doing a cash a basis only sale on them, or what are you doing with them?
Well, it depends with each individual, but yeah, there's flexible ways you go. We just like waiting for the basis to improve and just flat price them.
I think it's difficult to own $9 beans coming out of the field when you take a look at all the things that could go wrong as we look down the road. Basis levels are very favorable. So I guess I'm inclined to convert that ownership to a less riskier position, which would be to sell the cash beans, replace it with a call of some kind or a bull call spread or some kind to stay in the game if South America begins to have problems. But to wait around for a basis over the futures or whatnot, I guess I would be inclined to let the basis traders trade the basis. Farmers need to look at the flat price.
Paul, you agree?
You know, Dan stole every word out of my mouth that he could. He's been around quite a few years, too. I think the only thing that I can really say that I was surprised Dan didn't say is he could take some of that money and, you know, even buy maybe his gasoline or pay for inputs or something next year. But, you know, the real point here is that a person raises this grain, and he has to be a good marketer of the grain as well.
So I think everybody's in agreement. They want beans sold sooner rather than later. Across the scale is perfectly fine. I think everybody is willing to replace them on paper if you are of that ilk. And then on the corn side of the ledger, I'm still not quite certain what we're doing. We're storing the corn crop and waiting it out. Is that what we have in mind? Because it's awfully expensive, well, and I'm not sure that's what you told me.
You know, I think what we're all saying here is that the odds favor that we're not at the major low yet, Todd. And,
right.
You know, there is this opportunity for carry in the marketplace. You know, we do have some tools like governments. You know, we get loans on from the government on to pay for carrying the marketplace, and you can lock in some carry in the marketplace, sell some deferred calls. There's a million tools that, you know, your local commodity man can help you with.
A final word from each of you. Kurt Kimmel, we'll start with you.
Well, there's just a lot of opportunity out there. I think it's just a matter of sitting down, look at your own situation, whether you have on-farm storage, off-farm storage, and there's still time to get in the game in here to pick up that extra few cents that you need.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group in Decatur.
My comment would be stay safe, take your time. Nothing's worth losing your life over. And I know we had a terrible time getting this crop in. So far, the weather, at least right now, looks to be generally favorable toward harvest, but be safe.
Paul Cooley?
A tip of the hat to Joe Grant for donating his newspaper articles to the Charles Lindy Library, and a tip of the hat to those two nice men.
All right. Thank you very much, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and that does wrap up this edition of Commodity Week. Thank you for listening. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.